gentlemen, welcome to a long time coming for another episode of Newborn Libertarian. I apologize for that. That's most likely my fault. However, we are back, and we have a guest that I will introduce in a moment, but I would like to bring in my co-host, Christian. How are you doing, Christian?
Doing great. Glad to be back on.
And our guest we have on, Zeke. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Zeke.
And
nice to meet all of you.
And he's going to be a great guest because he's got a cool subject we're going to bring up. And before we get into that, Zeke, if you would like to tell us a little bit about your political background before you came to the gloriousness that is libertarianism.
Sure. I suppose I come a little more from a left-leaning approach than most libertarians seem to come out of. I met Christian online, actually. I think it was in a random thread. I can't really remember the subject matter, but we kind of got into it a little bit online, but it was respectful, which is, you know, a lot different than most internet fights, as you would see normally. And I kind of normally try to live life with open ears and was kind of digging what he was saying and decided to look into it myself. And I feel like that's something a lot of people from both sides of the political spectrum that tend not to do. So that's kind of how I came to find libertarianism through Christian and just my own private research.
Right on. I actually came from the left too before I became a libertarian. So we do have that in common at least.
Yes.
But
I'm the only one on here from the right.
Yeah. Well, if it makes you feel any better, I was first on the right before I hit the left. So I guess that's weird.
And you know what? Two wings, same bird.
Yeah. However, but the subject of this podcast is not only did Zeke come from the left, but, well, Christian, I'm going ahead and let you you take it from there because you're the one who helped our friend Zeke here off onto the path of awesome.
Yeah. It wasn't so much to me. Like, I think Zeke really, really did kind of have an open mind because he really went and did his research really hard. It seems like over the span of 3 months, I've seen him, you know, sharing Bernie videos, and then 3 months later, he's, you know, quoting Rothbard about why private policing is superior to the public sector, and that didn't come from me. That just came from Zeke doing his research. So I was really curious to get Zeke on here and really know, like, what was his mental process that, like, what were the steps and how was that road and what kind of things did he look into and discover and what were some things that really stuck out for him?
Of course. It started, honestly, with that conversation we had online. And from there, I kind of reevaluated why I was, I'll admit, a Bernie supporter about 3 months ago. And it was really came a lot from my dissatisfaction with the way I saw the country heading, the way I saw corruption in politics, and just my own mental state of feeling like I wasn't able to identify 100% with the left, and definitely not the right at that time, as far as it comes to social issues. So I guess I felt myself leaning towards Bernie Sanders just because he was talking about change, you know, the old Obama hope and change thing. Well, I wasn't really a bandwagon on Obama at all. I kind of wasn't even in the political spectrum of ideas back in high school. I really got into, I guess, the Sanders movement just because of his anti-establishment thing. But when you really look at what it is, it's not anti-establishment. He wants to solve corrupt government with more government, which is almost like a circular logic kind of thing and doesn't even seem to hold any real value or actual results. As I was kind of looking into more privatization, and as you said, I was looking up Rothbard, and I was looking up all these different great intellectual thinkers who right now I just can't seem to think of any. What am I reading right now? I just finished the Libertarian Manifesto about a couple weeks ago, and I really like that. I got Amazon Prime a couple days ago, and I've been addicted. I've been ordering books like crazy for all the free shipping, so I have Economics in One Lesson coming in. I've got The Real Lincoln coming in. Just all these great thoughts and things I've never really explored. So, yeah, it really did change my mind just doing my own research. and looking into what it means to be an individual, what it means to have personal responsibility, which I feel a lot of my generation seems to be lacking. And I think that's why the Bernie bandwagon is so appealing. Specifically?
Well, I mean, I almost wonder, you know, the different strategies from a libertarian perspective in talking to people on the left and talking to people on the right, because what makes the philosophy so interesting is that it's got the utilitarian argument and the ethical argument. So it's almost weird. I almost seem to, when I talk to more right-leaning people, I almost try to use the ethical argument because they're always like, don't take my guns.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, yeah, those guns are your guns and no one can have those. And they're like, yeah, they can't have my guns. But it's almost when you are talking with someone on the left, you have to agree with them in principle and say, look, we both agree that we're trying to help things improve. But you have to almost show them that even if your intentions don't match the result when you use this plan, and this is the reason why, you can't just come at them kind of antagonistically. And sometimes I like to do that anyway. But sometimes when you can tell that someone's actually thinking and you can reach them on some principle level, it seems like that's the way to talk to people on the left. Would you agree?
I would agree. I would say a lot of them, not to be insulting, but like to be on that moral high horse. I feel like they feel like the left is more morally justified than the right, and I'm not really sure where they get that, because both are just as corrupt or crony capitalistic than the other. They're, like you said, birds of the same feather, the same thing. But if you tend to approach them from that angle, they seem to be more willing to listen once they realize that your goals and their goals are aligned. Because now it's not, I think you're wrong, it's I think you're right, but I think you're going about this the completely wrong way. And they might be willing to give you like a second chance. And then if they're reasonable and they use their own logic, I'm pretty sure they will find their way to libertarianism just because of how nonsensical, non-hypocritical it is. I remember having a conversation with you when I was first getting into the movement about how there seems to be, when you're discussing with someone, when you're coming from the left or right, there's always a hypocrisy of you saying one thing, but then your party movement or your ideas seem to support another. But with libertarianism, it's fairly consistent and easily defendable using basic logic and not going by case by case, because you can widely apply the libertarian movement to everything, mm-hmm. in a sense.
Yeah, I think that's the main appeal that it had for me was, and I say it often, is as a libertarian, you won't find your foot, you won't have to be pulling your foot out of your mouth often because it's consistent logic. And when you come up against something or a situation, well, there's just using logic, it's a consistency to it that, you know, it was just freeing to be able to think and not, and to use logic and not have to be in these moral quandaries anymore. And just having that consistency is something that's incredibly important, I think, is something that we need to have in society, because we get in these situations, and that's how we get the corruption, is just having these, this case-by-case basis thing gets us in huge trouble, and yeah. It's just, it doesn't do any good for people, because you get into the whole favoring groups thing, and that's just how we have so much trouble.
I completely agree with that. I know one of the big issues, there's several big issues, a lot having to do with equality, and people just don't seem to realize that when you force equality on a group of people, you're limiting their freedom. And kind of a scary notion is that while I'm having, like, you know, online debates with people or online conversations with friends and family, a lot of them have absolutely no problem with limiting freedom as long as they're quote-unquote equal, and in reality, there never will be, just because of how difficult that is to mandate and force people into perfect little squares, if that makes any sense.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, you're not treating them equally. If equality of outcome is your result, you're treating people unequally.
Correct.
But if you treat people, you know, equally under the law, outcomes are going to be unequal, but it tends to create a rise in everyone's standard of living, you know, costs of production go down and people have access to more, you know, means of satisfying their wants. But I mean, I was really wondering, like, what areas of libertarianism really interested you the most when you started reading? Was it kind of the economics? And if it was the economics, what part really do you really enjoy reading about, or was it the philosophy, or was it just the natural rights perspective, or were there any personalities that you really enjoyed? What kind of, do you kind of attach to, or were you like researching?
Let me see here. I just actually shared a video. Friedman is probably one of the people I'm really into right now. Just because I like the way he seems to dialogue with his public debates and stuff. I've been actually listening to those as I go to sleep at night, just because it seems to be the only time of day I have time to do any research nowadays, just because I'm working full time now. And just the way he approaches things in like a nonsensical, logical, step-by-step analysis of others' arguments, breaks it down, and then shows them how they're wrong, and how free market capitalism and the idea of liberty and individual freedom and personal responsibility trumps most of everything when it comes to advancements, like you were saying, in society.
Yeah, Friedman was a great debater. I love watching his videos on YouTube. That was something that really got me going on it. He's just, you know, he's so calm when he speaks. Have you seen Thomas Sowell
doing his, I was just his, about like, to say, yeah.
I was looking into him, but I was kind of still on my Friedman binge.
Oh, yeah, Thomas
but
Sowell.
But he's definitely next on my list. I actually ordered one of his books. I can't remember for the life of me which one I got, though.
Basic Economics is one you'll want to definitely get. Like, that is one of the most basic, like, very well put, like, if you want to learn basic economics in like the most like easy terms ever, other than economics in one lesson, I'd say Thomas Sowell, but he's pretty awesome for that too.
I mean, he was a student of Milton Friedman's. Like knew him on a personal level too. I mean, and you can see it in the way they both speak and in the way they both react to the questions they're being asked, and even how they're never really caught off guard. They just,
yeah.
And what makes it even awesomer about Thomas Sowell, I think, is that Sowell said he was a devout Marxist, and then Milton Friedman turned him around. So he knows the other side to the extreme, all their arguments, you know, inside and out. And the funny thing is, I've noticed, is that their arguments never really change. See an argument coming, and you've encountered it in so many different ways that you know how to logically break it down and where it goes wrong, the more you run into them.
Yeah. I definitely find that to be true. You were asking earlier about like what kind of facets in society interest me about the libertarian perspective. One of the biggest things I feel I have is just the police state I find ourselves heading into in some areas of the country. That's probably one of the most heated debates I have with people on my Facebook, people on the internet, just because of the way society treats law enforcement. Both seem to be extreme spectrums. Either there's cop haters or there's diehard cop supporters. And I feel like I find myself somewhere in the middle. I don't necessarily hate them, but I feel like you were talking earlier about privatization, accountability, and stuff like that really made me see how personal responsibility, even for them, and having free market govern, govern's probably the wrong word here, but the free market kind of regulates who would get business as a private security force, rather having a state mandate, this is what you get and this is what you have. And I find that approach is a lot more logical to me, and that really got me into the movement, and really kind of got me hooked and invested in looking more into it. Like you said, economics was probably the other side. I really loved my economics class, but they taught me all the Keynesian,
of course, stuff.
High school, you know, public school, what are you going to do? So I was interested in the subject matter, but I feel like at the same time, there's just so many different views that they throw at you, and they never really confirm that there's one more correct or one less correct, because it's all really up to the interpretation of the teacher. And I find that confusing for most people.
It almost seems like when you first learn Keynesian economics, it's a bunch of formulas and if-thens and assumptions about, you know, this is the way society acted in the past, so it's the way it's going to act in the future, when they don't realize that those situations can't ever be, like, repeated. So your formula is faulty. You're just looking at a snapshot, but things have changed since then. So the stuff you put in, you're not going to get the exact same result. So they're kind of, you know, if you've watched a lot of the Mises Institute videos when they get into, you know, the difference between praxeology and empiricism, is they'll say, you know, empiricism, at the end of the day, they'll say they'll never, it, like, the result never confirms nor denies what happens. This, at, basically, at the end of the day, they don't really know anything. They just kind of predict, and then whatever happens, happens, but it's never their fault, whenever so, because they're just, they're devoid of any kind of theory beforehand. So, I mean, I was wondering, did economics make more sense to you after you kind of discovered, like, even a Friedman, Chicago school kind of, free market kind of idea. Did the economics begin to make more sense as a kind of a science than it did when you're just learning the standard Keynesian arguments?
Yes. Because as I was going over all this information, all these books, all this research, I was having kind of like weird little flashbacks to high school. Like, yeah, they touched on that, but they never really took off on more than just that. They touched on the basics and they went into Keynesian, sorry, mumble there. They went into different schools of thought, and after that, it was, you know, just public school memorization for a test. So they didn't really give us a chance to practice these ideas or practice regular basic economics. And I feel like a lot of that was missed on a lot of people. And then when you introduce kind of like a moral standpoint about what humans are entitled to, it kind of all falls apart for the left there, and just basic economics kind of goes out the window for most people.
Yeah, well, like, they forget there's a humans in there. There's a human aspect. Kind of important.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, like, in the aspect of economics you've been studying, you said you kind of fell back on, you know, the one thing that you really tend to focus on is the police state. I tended to see that as, once I started researching, like, Mises, and understanding, like, the calculation problem, that's what really solidified it for me, you know. The calculation problem kind of applies to a central planner doesn't know where to put goods and services because they don't know the relative cost that they're taking from another sector as well. So logically, to me, it would apply to, you know, the police state as well. And that kind of, for me, helps solidify my argument for, say, like, private policing, where you say, you know, the if everyone had to pay, you know, for security to have that service provided for them, who's going to pay for the entity that's going to come knock on their door in the middle of the night, break it down, and take their kid off to jail? I mean, no one would voluntarily pay for that. Like, you can only have that kind of system when the state doesn't know or doesn't respond to the values of the consumer. It just responds to what it wants to do or what a voting base wants to do.
Right, majority rule kind of takes over. If majority of the population thinks, you know, X should be legal and people who have X should be punished, then, yeah, you can see how almost half the population is being what they deem treated as unfair and having their liberties taken away just because either a corrupt politician said so or majority rule who was misinformed made the wrong decision when voting on, you know, whatever matter it might be.
So you're in Oregon, right?
Right now I'm actually back in California.
California. How is it there? Like, how is the police state there as opposed to, and what is kind of the local reaction to the police state? I guess it depends on what kind of
community. It really depends on where you live in California, just because I live kind of like in that middle of that megalopolis from LA to San Diego. So there's a lot of little niches and community. I personally try to limit my encounters with police as much as possible, so I don't really try to drive anywhere or get into any kind of situation where I have to interact with them. So I personally don't see the complete full force of the authority, but, you know, through online videos on YouTube, you can look up how things are changing in Los Angeles, how things are changing in certain areas of the community. But I always take everything with a grain of salt. Like I said, I try to keep an open mind. So looking at videos online, it's kind of hard for me to determine how the police state is in California. It's because I personally haven't been directly affected. I mean, I'm always terrified when I'm driving back home from, you know, a dispensary or someplace when I'm not supposed to have something in my car, if you know what I'm talking about. And I'm always a little nervous when, you know, a cop pulls up behind me. I'm like, oh, God, please, no. And that's probably my experience with policing, even though I've, knock on wood, yet to be pulled over for having that in my car. But, yeah, it's kind of a hard question to ask, unfortunately. Sorry, I don't really have a better answer than that.
No, it's okay. And I was also wondering, so we've all, you know, very rarely is someone, you know, born into a libertarian family or raised that way. So we've all kind of come from different backgrounds. So there's always, you know, one part of what we used to believe that we look back and we're just kind of like, how could we do that? Like, for me, it was the warfare state. You know, it really makes me kind of sad to remember myself in high school or in a human geography class, how I would defend the actions of invading some country and, you know, just doing whatever it takes to take out the leader and not realizing the real cost of that, not just in terms of the loss it has, that the destructive like war has on the economy, but on the effects of people's lives over there. So that's kind of the one thing that I would be equally repulsed by from where I've come from in my intellectual journey. So what, from your perspective, what is the one thing that, because I guess since you're coming from the left, you kind of already had a predisposition to right. opposing the police state, but what kind of things are, do you kind of sit back and you're like, wow, you really used to say things like this?
Free education under the whole Bernie Sanders thing was probably my skeleton in my closet. I thought it was a great idea just because of, you know, the desired end result where we have a highly skilled, more educated workforce. But when you think about it, when you provide free education like that, especially through government, I mean, I had my K-12 public school, and I would love a refund on my taxes, if you know what I mean, because I didn't really feel like I utilized the best amount of money for, you know, my parents' money, I suppose, because they were the one paying taxes. My education, obviously. As far as political backgrounds, my family is pretty, I don't want to say independent. They just kind of don't care, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. They don't really have a political affiliation. They kind of vote. It's almost randomly, honest. I've never really seen a consistent pattern. It kind of flip-flops back and forth. Some years they don't even vote at all. So I don't really have a strong background. I guess I kind of got into left just because of public school. And just having a lot of liberal friends down here in California. Other than that, I mean, I was on the whole Bernie Sanders train for a while, so that's probably, like, my biggest skeleton in the closet as far as what I feel, I guess, repulsed or embarrassed by, just because I bought into it so hard. Mm-hmm. Looking back, I can see why I bought into it, though, and I can see why it was wrong. So, I'm grateful that I took that journey. I have friends now on Facebook who are, like, mad at me because I don't support Bernie Sanders anymore. They're like, what happened to you? You were so into the movement. I'm like, yeah, no, not anymore. Sorry. I find myself having debates with them now on Facebook about how it's wrong. And I think it's kind of an advantage on my side because I can see their logic, like you were saying with Sowell and about how he was once a hardcore Marxist. And I can see their logic and how they form their thoughts and where they're coming from morally, and I say I agree with you, but that's not the best way. You know, it's going to make matters worse. Government is inefficient. You're just going to make it more difficult for people to, you know, overcome poverty or whatever their situation is.
That's what I'm the most interested in. Like, is if I was to throw some questions at you, like I was a Bernie supporter, and. Like, and see how maybe you would, like, so say for the, you know, like for the free school, you said for that specifically. So, I mean, economically, we know that's going to be terrible, but,
yeah. When you mandate, ahead. I guess, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You sound like you were about to start that one. So
yeah, when you seem to have one single selection. I actually heard a joke, I can't remember who the comedian was, but he was talking about the difference between, like, Starbucks and the DMV. When you go to Starbucks, you have great customer service, options, You can go to Pete's Coffees, you can go to Starbucks Coffees. You have all these options, all these customer service, and all these different companies are competing for your money, for your loyalty. And when you go to the DMV, there's only one place to get a driver's license. And everyone treats you like crap because they hate their job, you know? So he went on and on about that. And that's my same argument with college. I'm like, you went through K-12 public school. You know how it's just memorization and standardized testing. You know how they're not really focused on what you need. It's more like a wide blanket of this is what we think American citizens should know. This is what we think American citizens should come out of school with the mindset of. And it's almost like scarily like indoctrination. I won't go that complete tinfoil. But there is definitely a liberal, or not liberal, forgive me, but progressive sense to universities nowadays. I mean, going to Portland State, my God, it's so left. It's insane. But I understand where they're coming from just because, like I said, I was from that side. But if someone was to ask me, or like you posed the question of why Bernie's free education would be bad, first of all, economically, it just wouldn't stand. The quality would be terrible. The tuition would just, I believe, go up. As you can see, there's like a direct link between student loans right now and the skyrocketing tuition. I actually just posted an article, I think it was Washington Post, that just made this article about how student loans are probably driving up the tuition. And I definitely think they are, because when you have something that's going to be subsidized and an endless pocket of, you know, taxpayer money, why would you not charge as much as possible if you know people are going to pay for it? If the government's going to pay for it, schools are just going to raise a tuition until it doesn't even make sense to go anymore. But as a consumer, because you have the government subsidizing you, you don't really feel that immediate impact.
It's the same way with public school, like K-12. You get the hidden cost of actually sending a kid to public school, K-12, actually rivals that of private schools.
Right. And with a private school, you can probably even send them to like a specialized school if you want them growing up to be some kind of science-based major. You can send them off like a science-based private school, and you know that's what your kid's into, that's what your kid will get into. But with public school, it kind of just takes, you know, different kids are different pegs, and they're trying to all shove into like a square peg, and not everyone's going to fit, and some kids are going to fail out because they just don't find school to be catering to them, where with a private school, you can pick and choose what suits your goals, what suits your life best.
I said one time I got laughed at, but it's true. Whether it's DMT or not, public schooling K-12 really just acts as a social welfare program for teachers' unions and administrative boards, because in a free market setting with the technological capability we have now, the ability to go online and get a quality education for far cheaper, have a far better structured curriculum, at possibly the cost of a Netflix subscription, one could imagine, or even free if the website is driven by advertising. There's all kinds of models we can think about. You're just subsidizing the ability for a teacher to sit there and, you know, do what they've always dreamed of doing, or just sitting in a classroom telling kids what to do, or making them do their homework and just pretending, maybe in some cases pretending like they're still in high school. Or you've got the private school side of it too. Private schools wouldn't be able to charge jacked up rates if the public schools weren't crowding out the entire market for, say, like a middle class school. So they're kind of protected too by the high barriers to entry.
Right.
Well, we have the top 1% that can pay for everything. The top 1%, guys.
Yeah, apparently. You were saying with teachers and, you know, becoming complacent in their teaching because now they have a school board telling them exactly what to teach. They can just hand out the textbooks and go. And you have these kids who are going to private tutors, like their parents are paying extra to be tutored. Or I know I almost failed my high school physics class because the teacher like had literally no idea how to teach. Like, he knew the subject matter well, he had a doctor's degree in something, but he just couldn't seem to relate to the kids. And I find myself going online to like khanacademyvideos.com and like teaching myself physics. And I got an A in the class at the end, but I literally had to teach the entire course to myself. And that's just one of the failings of public school and government-mandated, education sources.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like if you go to Walmart and you buy something and you're not satisfied, you never buy from it again. But if you're not satisfied with the way someone's teaching you in a public school setting, there's no just opting out. Like, you don't just quit paying your property taxes.
Right.
Someone will show up at your door. So yeah. It always kind of makes me laugh when people say, oh, it's not force and theft, you just don't want to be taxed. It's like, well, I could flip that around on you and say, you just want my whatever reason that you think. And it's really kind of disingenuous because they say, oh, without public schools, how would the poor go to school? As if the public school program somehow helps poor kids. But it seems like the poor kids always get the short end of the stick in, like, the poor communities.
Right.
They always get the short end of the public school stick.
Yeah, especially when you base off the quality of your school off property taxes. If you're in a low-income area, you're going to have a really crappy funded school. You're going to have kids dropping out. You're going to have kids turning to streets and stuff. So it's not an ideal situation. And I feel like people know that, and for some reason they want to blame capitalism when it's not. They just find it as a convenient scapegoat. I don't understand why.
And it's just really funny because Christian always hears me rail about this when I'm all like, just open a damn dictionary. The definition of capitalism does not involve government. says free of government. How can it be capitalism? Socialism involves government. How the hell can you get that confused?
It's just, you know, one intervention breeds another, and one Band-Aid here causes another problem over there. So then you need another Band-Aid. Now you've got two Band-Aids, and now that they're working together, you get an altogether
different
third problem.
I'm like, we can't give
and
you...
And then everyone blames the market.
I was like, we can't do free school. If you can't even open a damn dictionary to see that the definition of capitalism doesn't involve government, then we don't need to give free school because they can't read a damn dictionary. So it's you got to fix the education first.
Have you read Defending the Undefendable? Have either of you?
Yes.
No, I added it to my list. I was actually going to order it, but I never got to it.
You can get it for free as like an ebook on Mises.org, but you can get a lot of books for free.
I can send you a podcast feed with like a bunch of Mises audiobooks. I've got a podcast feed with all of them. You can just put them on your whatever your MP3 catcher is. Boom, bunch of awesome audiobooks for free.
Yeah.
Defending the Undefendable, that book is one that I would recommend to anyone. It's by Walter Block, so it's a book I'd recommend to anyone who's kind of unfamiliar with the principles of free market economics. You just kind of show them how, hey, you know, you think that these worst, most dirty aspects of this aren't good. And he makes a really funny, comical kind of case for it, but it all makes sense also. So that's one I'd recommend. To people. But when you know, you said you're getting into debate with your former Bernie supporter friends. Do you feel like any of it's rubbing off on them? Is there anyone that is kind of listening?
There are a couple people who I feel like they tell me I have valid points. And then I'm like, great, now go look into it more. It's all up to you. But yeah, it's definitely an uphill battle just because I feel like they're so ingrained in the morality of treating everyone equally, which while, you know, socialism seems to have these idealistic goals as an outcome, the very realistic truth of it is that they fall very, very short from what they actually want to accomplish. A lot of people's problem with capitalism is they say that there's too much wealth and power in the hands of a few. And my response to that is, so you want to give all this wealth and power to the hands of a few in the government? Like, how is that any better? You're making it just as bad, especially when you have, like, the revolving door of politics. Now you have all these lobbyists. We're going in and out of government, and it's the same people. They're all feeding off each other's backs.
Another way to win that argument, it's a little bit easy, but you just say, hey, well, why don't you write a check to some kid in Sudan? Like, why don't you sell a bunch of stuff and donate there? Because you're the 1% to them, you know,
oh, yeah.
So why don't you put your money where your mouth is? But that's unfair, supposedly. And,
right.
You know, if they take, like, the kind of the Thomas Rawls philosophy for it, it's like, you know, well, it's only within the borders that matters, because inequality without, when you have borders, shows that discrepancies between countries tells you which country is running correctly. But then you could tell the Thomas Rawls supporter, it's like, hey, well, if differences within countries give valid reason as to why there's economic discrepancy, then so do differences between the actions of individuals.
Right. Yeah, you can definitely extend that on to individuals.
Yeah,
I mean, individualism is kind of what all boils down to. And
yeah.
I feel like this collective hive mind of everyone should be treated the same and everyone should be, you know, given equal outcomes is really toxic to our generation. I mean, I understand why, and I understand the, I guess, beauty of having everyone be equal in life, but at the same time, you're not really free, you're not really having a quality of life that you could have when you have, you know, inequality. Inequality is great. It's actually necessary for society to function, because once you have inequality, the incentive to try harder or, you know, put in a little effort is just disappears if everything's going to be handed to you, if everything's going to be equal. And, you know, a common response to that is like, well, you're being unfair, you're calling people lazy. I'm like, I think it's more rude and more unfair to say that people need government or else they can't make it, you know?
Oh, Kim's got thoughts on that.
I feel like, yeah, like, people want to say, like, oh, you're either, you know, bigoted or ignorant because you think that poor people should suffer. I'm like, no, I think that if you keep everyone to one standard, everyone's going to suffer. Not everyone can enjoy the quality of life that they can enjoy if they were free to do what they needed to do and what they wanted to do in order to better themselves.
Yeah, oh, gosh, I hate when people's like, oh, yeah, you know, you need government. It's just... Now, the whole... Now, of course, welfare is now something that has caused a lot of trouble. And, you know, even though people don't like to say it, it's a common thing that people like to attribute to black people. And well, sometimes, yeah, unfortunately, Hispanic people, too. My mom was one of those unfortunate people that had to deal with that sort of thing. And I had to deal with it when I was younger. And, well, you know, I was like, okay, so we have to depend on government. But then the government is clever in their evilness and has a way of trying to keep you there. Right. And welfare just keeps it at just the level to make sure that you're dependent on it. But if you just go one step above it, you're going to lose that dependency. So it's like they scare you into that dependency. And everybody's right. Like, oh, the government loves you. They want to take care of you. But then they threaten the crap out of you at every possible way to make sure you stay there. So I'm like, if they were so loving, they wouldn't have 8 million thresholds if you're on welfare. And if you're just trying to, like, you're on disability and maybe you can't work full time, but oh my goodness, you work a couple hours more and suddenly they're going to take it all away from you, even though you can hardly work because you broke, you know, you injured your back or something, but you have so many kids or something like that. And I just can't stand when people want to just say, oh, you know, you should be dependent on the state. You know, the government does not love you. And I just, people that want you to be dependent on the state. No, no, I'm not dependent on government. It's just not a good solution for anything because they're not looking for your best interest at all. If they were, I cannot be convinced.
I've known people who were dependent on, well, they were on welfare in Oregon where I used to live because I wasn't in the best part of town. And I had a lot of friends who were reliant on it, and they would try to better themselves, they would try to get out. But one of my friends, and I won't mention them just for privacy and stuff, they told me that, kind of similar to what you're saying, that they've been searching for a better job, but they can't find a job that gives them enough money to be stable, and also... if they make too much, but not... so they're not going to make enough money in a new job that they could find to be stable, and they won't have enough money to be on welfare. They'll have too much money to be on welfare and not enough to be stable where they want to be. So they're kind of in this limbo stage where they have to kind of keep their crappy job until some other opportunity comes along or else they move into another apartment. But based on their income, based on where they live, because they lived in government-subsidized housing too, and so they just were in this chokehold of being dependent on government.
It's the phenomena of the rising marginal cost, and it's really an extreme kind of thing. It's also called like the welfare cliff. So say, like, I know these are really low numbers, but say you can collect $5,000 of welfare benefits from the state, or you can work 40 hours a week in that same time span, or maybe 50, 60 hours a week because you know, got to work two jobs, got to take care of your kids. But if you work the 50 or 60 hours a week, the most you can make is $5,500. Well, you're really only working 50 or 60 hours a week for the marginal benefit of $500. It's just the difference. Yeah. So why would you spend all that time working when you can spend no time working and just kind of lose the the effort it takes to get the $500 more, because you can do nothing and collect $5,000. It's just people's personal, you know, valuations. And the higher you make the marginal cost, the more people are likely to come down or to disregard the amount of work it takes to rise out and really meaningfully remove themselves from the cliff.
And then people get mad if, you know, you call some of those people lazy. I'm like, well, the government is making you lazy. So yeah, what do you want us to do?
It's we're all inherently lazy to some extent. We all want to maximize our productivity.
Yeah.
And if your productivity can be maximized by doing nothing, I mean, that's pretty good. So it's not that people on welfare are, you know, lazy in and of themselves. The incentive structure is such that from where they've started, you know, it does make more sense just to
hang back.
Yeah.
It's like getting punished for doing things because they're going to take it away from you. And you're like, well, damn. I mean, I can't get anywhere if I try. You know, it's like it's taken away from me and I can't get enough to get anywhere else. So, you know, it's just it's frustrating. So I don't see why it's like, I mean, you can and you said it much earlier. You know, it's you get frustrated with government and you saw the answer to that just is not more government. That's just right. Never the answer. And I've noticed on the right that their answer seems to have started to drift away from less government, if you haven't noticed.
Yeah, which is kind of, I mean, when I was on the left, most left just kind of anything someone from the right says you disregard completely, which is completely closed-minded and, you know, ignorant on so many levels. But generally, I'm noticing more now that, like Christian said earlier, they're different parties, but they act the same way. They're both kind of totalitarian in the sense that they want more government restrictions, more government mandates. They don't want, you know, certain people to do certain things, so they put restrictions. And with the left, it's, you know, same thing, different story.
I'm curious to know, because people that come from the left or people in the left, they're kind of taught by their thought leaders or their influences, the people they listen to on podcasts, that they're just supposed to, you know, like you said, just hate everyone on the right. But did anyone really ever mention anything about libertarianism? Was it like kind of a new thing? I mean, I don't want to like toot my own horn, but was I just like a exotic bird when I first encountered you, or did you have any kind of preconceived notion?
In a sense, yes. I feel like the definition of liberty and freedom is really skewed by the left. I feel like, to them, freedom is equality, and I don't understand that argument. I've had a couple friends tell me that, like, if you're equal, you're completely free. I'm like, but you're not. Like, you can have equal treatment under the law, but you can't be equal and be free. It's just not possible. But yeah, libertarianism, I've often heard that libertarianism has like a messaging problem. I don't really find that to be 100% true, because most of the time when, you know, as you mentioned earlier, a lot of people say, oh, people on welfare are lazy. And a lot of left people will say, that's just like an ignorant, racist, I don't know where that comes from, argument from the right. And I'm like, but it's not. It's libertarian presents that same kind of notion, but in a way that shows you that when you have welfare, when you have government dependency, you have a more sense of, you have more poverty because people are not incentivized to go out. And so when you call them lazy, it has it's like a hard pill to swallow. It's not a kind word to use. But like Christian said, we all are inherently lazy. We all want to get the most out of the least amount of effort. Mm-hmm. So calling people lazy isn't necessarily an insult. It's just human nature in a way.
Yeah. I mean, I was wondering, like, from the left, and this is something that I wouldn't really know, but, and Kim, you can answer this too. I mean, when you listen to people on the left, do they ever mention anything about libertarians at all? And then the second thing I wanted to say, when, you know, Zeke brought up the messaging problem, I almost you know, kind of agree. You know, for people that are open-minded and willing to listen, mm-hmm. almost I find that a majority of them are very receptive to our ideas. So I wonder if it's, and this is kind of maybe hard-headed of me, so maybe it's not a messaging problem. Maybe everyone else has a listening problem.
I definitely think it's some of that, too. I feel like just being willfully ignorant is a big problem by both the left and right. But yeah, you definitely were an introduction into what it really means to be an individual, what it really means to have personal responsibility. And you didn't teach me all that, but you kind of gave me the clues or the hints to find this path in which I found my own research. I feel like it's also a maturing thing. You tend to find that the stereotype of a Republican is like a grumpy old white dude for some reason. And a liberal is like long-haired, dread, hippie, you know, that kind of thing. And that's just kind of like part of
hippie. I take the hippies any day over today's left.
For real. Oh my goodness, I would.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's these preconceived notions about what it means to be liberal and what it means to be Republican. And I feel like there really isn't a big facet on libertarianism. Some of the memes, because I've been on certain Facebook groups that
taxation
like,
is theft. Sorry.
Libertarianism. And I'm just like, that's not a completely accurate representation of what it really is. And it's kind of unfair to not present. I mean, I can see why you wouldn't want to present something logical like this in a fair and balanced way when you're trying to push your own agenda. But when you really look at all the parties unbiased, you can really tell that libertarianism has the most freedom, has the most prosperity as far as economics and trains of thought and just having people rely on themselves to better themselves and not the government.
It's 5 o'clock.
Oh, I was like... I was like, was that my phone say that?
I don't know.
It was laptop. It's set up weird. He has all these weird features. I don't know why he doesn't know what time it is.
Can't read. Maybe he can't read a clock. I thought it was interesting that Zeke said that, you know, maybe it was a maturing kind of process for him. You know, Kim, because I thought that taking the libertarian stance just wasn't a mature position. You know, I've kind of been told that.
Huh. Really now?
Yeah. Hmm. I guess it's just not a thing that adults believe.
What? I don't know who said that to you. They lie. I don't know. I think for me it was maturing because, no joke, it was like an overnight change for me. Maybe not like, I don't know, it was like you hit this patch of logic on the way to libertarianism. It was like, especially when you come from the left, and it was like everything for me was emotion, and then you just slide into libertarianism, and it was suddenly just, it was logic. Like, you still have emotion, it's just, you know, your emotion was like, okay, I'm gonna have to use logic for this, because you have to realize there's the way I feel about things is not going to be the way that Zeke feels about things, maybe, or Christian feels about things. So let me go and logically, like, put this together and use the consistency of libertarianism and figure out the issue, because I cannot use how Kim feels about everything to make, you know, just the way a lot of legislators on the right and left do, try to make policies based on how I feel about things.
Right.
And everyday things, you know, if I came to work and decided, you know what, I'm going to base everything I do today on how Kim feels, and that's just not going to make the day great for everybody. So it was just like, I became a libertarian and everything was just, like, infused with just approaching things logically and stop doing everything emotionally. And that actually matured me a lot more. And for me, it felt more of a maturing and a growing up for me. So I don't know where that person was getting that, Christian. I don't know. Maybe I'm tooting my own horn. I don't know.
Yeah, I often feel like when I'm explaining this to people, I talk to them how I feel like my sense of personal responsibility and the fact that I'm in charge of my own destiny is empowering, mm-hmm. more empowering than it can ever be handed to you by someone else or some form of government. But I definitely think it's a mature sense of thought. I mean, it's all boils down to personal responsibility. Like, you are in charge of what you do. If you want to be an alcoholic and drink your life away, you know, you will deal with the consequences. If you want to put in the work and, you know, start a business, you will get the benefits of said business, you know?
Yeah, I think that was one of the things I figured out, like, when you make choices, because, you know, I still make bad choices, you make bad business ventures, you also have to take the responsibility and be like, ooh, I was the one who messed up, I had to take a loss, we're in the, like, we just screwed up, we took a loss, you know, it's the taking the responsibility, and I think that's what's scary for anybody who loves government, is if more people start finding out about being a libertarian and taking responsibility in their own hands, and they stop depending on the government, is why libertarians are so damn scary, because
a scary thought to know that if you mess up so bad, there's nothing there to catch you.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a thought a lot of people are uncomfortable with. Like, they want that security net.
I think it's, but once you move past that, it's kind of more liberating to know that that security net's not there to protect you, but because you know that it's not, you know what the contingencies are going to do, and you know that you are going to have to make some sacrifices and some tough choices, and you're kind of always mentally preparing yourself for that, so you're never caught off guard.
Right.
It's kind of like the doomsday prepping of, you know, your personal life. I mean, some people take it to the extreme and build bunkers underneath their houses, which I saw 10 Cloverfield Lane, which was, I thought, was a good movie.
I liked it a lot. I think Goodman was great.
Yeah, he was pretty good. So I was just wondering, you're still in college, right, Zeke?
I had to take a bit of time off when I moved back, but I'm starting up again, I think this fall.
Okay. Have you ever thought about going to any, you know, seminars around you where you live, or finding some, you know, liberty groups to get plugged into?
You know, I haven't, just because I feel like a lone ranger over here. I don't really know anyone outside of my, like, there's really no one in my friends. Even some of my friends, like one of my best friends, he's more conservative, but he tends to be, like you were saying, like the war hawkish kind of go nuke ISIS, like that kind of conservative. And I'm like, dude, calm down. Like, that's not the solution. It's not going to help. So even, like, within my own friends group, I seem to be the only one who takes personal responsibility. The only person I could say that's kind of leaning towards libertarianism is my friend Cameron, who's kind of just a regular, always been independent kind of guy. He kind of really values his own personal freedom just because of the household I think he grew up in. He was kind of restricting and very limited in what he was allowed and what not allowed to do. So I feel like he can really value what it's like to be free and what it means to have, you know, personal responsibility over your time and over your resources and over your labor. So he's a potential convert as we indoctrinate him. So maybe, you know, I could see if he wants to come on here sometime. I'm sure he'd love to.
Mm, yeah, we could have him. Yes. We're always welcome to have anyone on.
Yes.
Speaking of that, Kim, do you think the listeners all know what's been going on in your life recently?
No, they do not.
Do we want to share it here? Big announcement, surprise announcement?
I guess I probably should.
And then ambush?
They would, yeah, I guess so they will know why there was so much time in between podcasts.
Yeah, this is the reason why Kim's late, you guys. So
sorry.
Just...
Well, I am running for state senator in Nevada.
So, oh, that's awesome.
And actually running as a libertarian, so a bold, out-there libertarian. So the campaign has been going good so far. I'm running against a Democrat in a 2-1 Democrat district. And this guy has been a Democrat for a while. He's been there since about, like, he's beat the Republican last time around, so this will be, like, what, 8 years? Yeah, 8 years he's been in the seat. So, yeah, that's what I've been doing. It's interesting. But, yeah, we will see if I will be – we have one – we actually have John Moore, who is an assemblyman. He was a Republican that we talked over into becoming a libertarian, who is the highest-ranking libertarian in, like, basically, you know, somebody actually registered as a libertarian. But if I was to actually be elected, I'd be pretty much the one highest ranking registered libertarian that we have in the country.
Wow.
That'd be pretty sweet. So we're all pulling for you over there.
Yeah.
Zeke, so what kind of other projects are you looking forward to? You said you had a bunch of books on your reading list. Is there any, you know, is there any one in particular that you're just salivating over, or any kind of concept that's really...
He's busting out the list.
I got a list of books here that I've already ordered, and they're on their way.
And let's also sent him the audiobook feed in our little Facebook message, so there's a bunch of them in there that are free.
Free to Choose, Personal Statement by Friedman. One that's coming on the way. And then Economics in One Lesson, Poor New Liberty, I got that already. And then, of course, I'm going to add the other books you guys recommended to me to the list. But the one I'm really into the, not really related to libertarianism, but I guess in a way, it's called The Real Lincoln. It's about the decay of freedom after the Civil War and how that played such a big deal in heading to our current government right now.
So are you into seeing how terrible the presidents are?
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I already have some notion because it was always a topic. I remember in public school, someone brought up Jackson.
Yes. I got some books for you.
And the teacher was like, yeah, let's not get into that. And I was like, no, I want to know. Like, what did he do? Come on. And
so when you come to that topic, there's 9 Presidents Who Screwed Up America by, let's see, this one's by
Brian McClanahan.
You want to check that one. It's so good.
Is it?
So
yeah.
Good. So darn
and
good.
And also, while we're on that note, I don't know if anyone here we probably have a few listeners here that also listen to Tom Woods, but I would definitely encourage everyone listening to text 44222 and get the free course from Liberty Classroom on Brian McClanahan's top 10 and top 10 worst presidents in American history. You can listen to that in your car. So that was fun for me because learning about the history and stuff kind of explodes everything that you've been taught in school that just the basic outline, sugar-coated stuff you're supposed to believe.
Right. Like, definitely looking back, like, after I've done my own private research into some of the topics that I remember hearing about in school, I'm like, we hit and quit that thing so fast, like, in school. Like, they touched on it, it was 2 days of class, and it was, like, the basic, basic information about whatever historical event you want to input, like, for almost everything. And I'm like, why wasn't this expanded upon? Like, and the answer is just because
they were awful.
Yeah, and when you standardize something and like everyone has to learn the same thing in the same amount of time, you have to gloss over everything so quick, and kids end up just learning how to take a test and not actually learning how to any real value.
My mom was like this huge Obama fan. She's like, oh, you know, his favorite president is Abraham Lincoln. And I'm like, Bob, he didn't really free the slaves. But I didn't say that out loud. I really don't want to have to deal with that right now.
Yeah. I mean, I always knew that Lincoln wasn't the golden boy everyone painted him as, but I had no idea he was such a racist.
He was awful.
Quality.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, some of the stuff he did, you would just be all like, wow, this guy's...
I was like, wow, really? Because it's really funny. I have this friend we went to high school together, who's really hardcore progressive, like, to the max, like, they are what the memes are about. That's who this is.
Yeah.
And she loves Lincoln.
Oh, no.
Like, no one else. Like, she calls him Abraham Lincoln. Like, that's who this person is. And I'm like, I don't think you know who you like. Like, this is not the guy you want to be idolizing. She might have changed, but the last I saw her in, like, probably halfway through college, she still had that affinity for him. So
that's gross.
Yeah.
But
it was kind of scraggly, too.
Yeah, and, I mean, a lot of accounts that I heard about him, I mean, he was never that comely anyway.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of, since Christian wanted to embarrass me and ambush me, we need to talk about somebody who's been doing some writing over here, and he's been writing for Lou Rockwell. He's been doing some posts, so you want to tell us a little bit about that? Because I'm not going to be the only one who's being pointed out, so why don't you talk a little bit about that, Christian?
Yeah, because I totally didn't want to plug myself at all, and there was no under-the-table kind of messaging that went on to make it look like I wasn't asking for it. But anyway, yeah, so I've got two articles up right now. One was today, April 4th, on the phenomenon of why the left is so radical when they attack Trump, and it has to do with cognitive dissonance. The other article, I don't know if anyone here is watching has seen the movie Zootopia, but I thought it was it's one of those movies that progressives are like, oh, you know, this movie is so forward-looking and it fits our agenda and this and that. But when you really look at it, there's more to it than meets the eye. So that's my other article that I've posted before. Have you guys read them?
Yes. I've read – I was in the middle of reading the Trump article and then something pulled me aside, but I didn't know about the Zootopia article.
Okay, that's good enough for me. Yeah, but if you guys would go check that out, that'd be cool.
I will check out the Utopia, because I actually, I mean, I enjoyed that movie as an artistic value, and I got what they were kind of going with, like, the whole racism and stuff like that. But what have the left been saying about it? I really didn't take it more than just a kid movie when I saw it. I enjoyed it, and that was about it.
There were some really anti-state illusions that were going on in there, and mm-hmm. there was kind of a celebration of the people that existed kind of in the dark outside of the sphere of what we would consider, you know, what most people would consider ethical business.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that. I like the, there's a big aspect about police in that movie too. And yep. I walked away with something about that. But like I said, to me, I went with my brother. So I really didn't want to talk to him about the whole, like, ideas of the police state and racism. And I was like, it was a good movie. Let's go home.
Yeah, like, let's just go. Let's talk about something else.
Yeah.
But where'd you say they can email you, Christian?
Well, if you go to lewrockwell.com and you click on my article, today's article is entitled The Fanatical Left, I believe. Let's see. The Fanatical Left. If you click on that article, it'll take you to my article, and then it'll send you a link to my other one that I've written. And then it'll also have, like, a click here to email me. So if you want to write a review, you know, tell me how much you love my voice, any kind of stuff like that, it's all welcome. I'm just a sucker for flattery, I guess. I don't know.
All righty. And, Zeke, thank you for coming on. And we'd love to have you on, especially if you bring your independent friend on. We'd love to have him on. Or
yeah, no, thank you for inviting me. I was a little nervous coming on. Like I said, I don't have the most charismatic or eloquent language. Or
have you heard me talk?
He just used two big words, though. Yeah. So he's getting
it. I wasn't eloquent or anything. Come on.
Charismatic and eloquent. He used both of those words. Let it be known.
You've heard.
I just feel like I have a stutter sometimes when I get nervous, but I didn't do that bad. I felt like I did pretty good.
Yeah, look.
We try to keep it pretty chill. Yeah,
I have an English degree, which means I can write. That doesn't say anything about how I can speak, because I cannot. So, trust me. Christian is the one who's smart. I just talk, and not well. So, trust me. You did very well.
I think we're all pretty smart here, Ken.
Yeah, you just keep saying that. I just like to be the annoying one. That's my job.
You know what? I think our listeners are actually the smartest,
yes,
by the way.
They actually are. Why? Because they keep listening. And hopefully they'll continue to be smart and they will go onto iTunes and leave us a rating and hopefully a comment to tell us what they like, what they don't like. And if you don't like something, please be constructive and tell us what it is so we can hopefully correct it, unless you're being mean. And then I will just tell you that you're being mean. But otherwise, or you can send us an email. You can email us at newbornlibertarian@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at newbornliberty. We're on Stitcher. And I know I keep getting requests about how we should be on YouTube. And I'm just over here like, oh man, I'm campaigning and crap. And then I got to upload stuff to YouTube. And since it's got to be video and stuff, and you got to do stuff. Yeah, if somebody wants to do that for me for free, cool. Other than that, maybe one of these days. But it ain't going to happen right now. All right. Well,
we should
then
find an animator just to make a cartoon character of everyone who comes on, and then they can just do an animation for the episode.
That'd be pretty pimp.
So if you could do that, that'd be pretty funny.
That'd be awesome.
But it'd be expensive too.
Oh, that's a good point. Well then. All right. Well then, that's about the end. So, thank you guys for being on.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. You're coming back, Zeke.
Yeah, had a great time. You are definitely coming back. We will steal you.
Thank you.
All right.
Talk to you guys later.
All right.
Yeah.
Bye.